You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms and the new 110 Ultralight. At about 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel makes it durable and lightweight. The rifle comes equipped with the Savage AccuFit technology, so that means it's adjustable and it comes in a variety of calibers. The 308, the 270, the 28 Nosler, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 30-06, and much more. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. Got both Andy and Micah with me today. What's up, fellas?
Nothing.
Hi.
That's good. Got a good one today. We're going to talk about some
Missouri public lands.
Exactly.
With nobody better than
Aaron with the hunting public. So I hope you all enjoy the show. We are super excited to talk with him. We're big fans of the hunting public, and Aaron is another Missouri resident, or born and raised in Missouri, and he's got some good stuff to talk about, so hope you enjoy the show. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, welcome to the show. We got a good one today. We are with Aaron Warbritton with the Hunting Public. Got Andy and Micah with me as well.
Hello, hello.
Howdy, howdy.
And like I said, Aaron Warbritton's with us. What's going on, Aaron?
Not much, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good. We're excited to have you on, another Missouri boy like us. So that's why I reached out to you.
That's right. From up in old Paris, America there.
There you go. There you go. You got a little more experience than we do here, though, so... We're excited to get talked to you.
Yeah. So before we get started, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself? Obviously, you are working full time with the hunting public stuff you do. Introduce yourself, and then one thing we like to ask, and I think it'd be kind of cool to ask you since you've kind of been all over the place, is what is your favorite thing about Missouri?
Outdoors.
Sure. The Missouri outdoors.
Oh man, we could spend a lot of time talking about that. I grew up in Missouri, and all my family, well, I should say all, but the majority of my family is from Missouri, northeast Missouri around Paris.
Yep.
And Mark Twain Lake area, that's where I grew up hunting and learning to hunt and fish at a young age, and yeah, means a lot to me. And I'm one of the co-owners of the Hunting Public. It's a YouTube channel and basically just a hunting brand that was designed and created to show people how to have positive experiences in the woods hunting.
Absolutely.
So, and y'all do a really good.
That's what we do every day.
And y'all do a really good job of it. Anyway. Yeah, really good job of that too.
For sure. If any of our listeners haven't, I don't know if. If you're listening to us, I can almost guarantee you've already looked at their stuff.
But right.
If you haven't, you're doing yourself an injustice by not following Hunting Public.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What's one thing about Missouri that you know, what sets Missouri apart a little bit, in your opinion, from some of these other places you've been?
Well, I'll be honest. My opinion has changed a ton about Missouri in the last 15 years. And I won't go too far down the rabbit hole. I'll just answer your question first. But I would say the best thing that about Missouri now today is the access and opportunity. It's a good balance. Missouri has a good balance of access. There's a lot of hunters in Missouri compared to, like, the surrounding states. But there's a good amount of public access in Missouri. And is a lot of opportunity. Like you can harvest a couple of bucks each fall, and you can buy over-the-counter non-resident tags for fairly affordable price. Resident tags are fairly affordable. The archery season is pretty long. It starts in the middle of September and runs clear through the beginning of January. You also have rifle season in prime time in the middle of the rut. So, and then, you know, alternative methods and whatnot. All in all, in the state itself is managed well enough that there seems to be good deer populations across the board. And, you know, if you work hard at it and you desire to harvest a mature buck, it's doable in Missouri. They're not as prevalent as they are up in a state like Iowa, but there's a lot of differences with Missouri and Iowa, hunter numbers being the number one thing.
Right.
Like, there's just way, way, way more people in Missouri than there is in Iowa. So naturally, yeah, you're going to have more hunters and more tags filled. But I would say whenever we get asked the question all the time, like, what's one of the best over-the-counter states for whitetails to go to? And Missouri is always in that top five or six states,
yeah,
in my opinion. And I'm biased because I'm from Missouri, obviously. But
for sure,
having hunted a lot of these other places too, you know, it, like I said, it's a darn good place to go, just from the access perspective.
Yeah, and I think that's what's cool about, you know, not to be – I told you guys I wouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it a little bit. So I'm going to fanboy a little right now. You know, I think that's what's really cool about the hunting public is I don't ingest a lot of my stuff through video, but there's basically two YouTube channels I watch, and that's Born and Raised with Elk and Hunting Public with Whitetail.
Yep.
And I think what a lot of people can relate to is, you know, they can relate to you guys. You seem like your basic, normal guy, just like everybody else that's trying to hunt. And that comes across in your shows, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's who we are. We're just
right.
Regular. I mean, like I said, I grew up in Northeast Missouri. I graduated with like 37 people in my high school class out of Paris. And I started hunting whenever my uncles and my dad could take me out. You know, me and my cousins, they were coming back and taking us on track jobs, and we were 5, 6, 7 years old. I mean, you've heard this story before because that's how a lot of people get involved in it. You know, we grew up hunting small private land on permission and a small farm that my grandpa bought back in the '70s and public land.
Yeah.
So we're just like everybody else for the most part.
How did you, and that's one question I was going to ask you is what you grew up hunting. You know, more public or private. You know, how did you make that transition when you got into this sort of, you know, where you hunt a lot of public? I know on some of your shows, you know, you're back home hunting family farm and stuff on some of them, but, you know, most of the time you guys are back out in public land. When did you kind of make that transition in your career, I guess you'd call it?
I started out hunting private land when I was a kid, but would occasionally venture out on the public with my dad and uncles and stuff to hunt turkeys or, you know, rabbits or squirrels or whatever. But I didn't do much deer hunting on public land until I was a teenager. I killed my first deer and my first turkey off my grandpa's farm that my dad, his stepmom, still live on right now. And that's the one that I constantly go back to every year just because, you know, it's where I learned to do all that stuff. I caught my first fish out of that lake right there on that property too. So it's very important to me, but
for sure.
My cousins and my uncle farmed a piece of ground out near some public land, like it bordered right up against public land, and they had permission to hunt that private property. So I hunted that private property with them some, but we also hunted over on the public land. And I shot my first buck with a bow out of an old tree stand that my uncle called Old Faithful. And it was right on the public-private border.
and we could hunt the private, the Milo field, or the, at the time it was a Milo field, it was an ag field, because my uncle farmed it. We could hunt that ag field because he farmed it, and all the deer were bedding on the public land. And I shot a little hat rack buck that came off the public land that night and headed out to the Milo out of that stand. That was the first deer that I ever killed with a bow. So he was on, I ended up shooting him about 10 feet on the private and went over on the public land and recovered him. So, and that was kind of how it was for me. I guess it was sort of a slow transition. Now I hunt primarily public land. But back in my teenage years, after I killed that buck, I hunted probably 50-50. I hunted a little bit of public land here and there, and then I hunted on the farm and a couple other private land pieces that I had permission to hunt on. But at a young age, I would say when I was a teenager, I started really getting into going in and hunting new properties. That was something that really got my interest early. I liked the idea, especially once I got my driver's license. I was like, man, I really like the idea of having five or six small spots, even if everybody else can hunt them. I really like to have the idea of going to those different places, because it seemed like I would hunt one spot and I would get close or whatever. I wouldn't get a deer. And then after I hunted it two or three times, it just wasn't as good. But then I'd bounce over to one of my other spots I hadn't even been at, and then all of a sudden I'm in deer.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like when I was moving around, bouncing from spot to spot, regardless of whether it's public or private, I was seeing more deer that way. So, and then it was just a progression from there. When I got up to Midwest Whitetail after college and was getting into the filming stuff hot and heavy, a buddy of mine that I hired as an intern, Pat McSherry, came down from Minnesota, and him and I both started hunting a lot of public land in Iowa together. That was 2011, 2012. That's when we started doing that.
So back then, how did
and
you...
That was when it kind of switched to full-time. Before that, I hunted a split between public and private, but in the beginning of 2012, I pretty much since then have hunted, 98% public land.
That's cool.
Yeah, makes sense. So back then, how did you start identifying? So, like, for people traveling that don't live close to the public lands, I mean, you were traveling to Iowa and then you started traveling different places. How did you start scouting places? I mean, was it just boots on the ground? Did you use e-scouting? I mean, then I'm probably a little less, available than it is now. But
use a little bit of everything. Google Earth, Onyx, once it came around is a real handy tool. Also calling locals and trying to get any sort of information that you can about the area, whether it's local hunters, landowners, do an internet search about the area. You might be able to pick up a few tidbits from a forum or something here and there, or even a local biologist or a local conservation agent, that kind of all preliminary work that we do before we go somewhere. And then once we get there, it's just a combination of map scouting and boots on the ground.
That's cool.
And driving around.
And we'll get into us in a second too, but I don't know about you all, but as I started hunting, I always heard, these bad stories about public ground, like, you're going to run into 20 guys and you can't kill any good deer off there. Well, you all at the Hunting Public have obviously proven that you can take quality deer off of public land. All I got to do is go watch one of the many you've done.
Say pick one.
Right. So that gets rid of that issue, right? But what would the advice you give somebody that is, has that, that mentality about public land that it's not quality, and they don't want to go do it, or they're scared to go do it because of the horror stories, I guess you'd call it, that they hear, because they're
hell, that's the way I thought.
Say what?
Yeah, that's the exact same way I thought when I was younger.
Sure.
I was the same mindset. That's why I said a while ago, like, my opinions of places and things have changed a lot over the years just through experiencing all these different, environments and areas. But, yeah, I mean, I hear the gripe. Because I used to be that person. I used to
go hunt public land or right next to it on private, and I would watch somebody walk in through the woods on public, and I would just be so mad. I'd climb down out of the stand, or if somebody walked by and ruined my hunt, I would just say, to heck with this, there's people everywhere, this is impossible. You know, there's no big bucks that are going to be coming out of there. Or whatever, you know, it's, I was fed up with it at different times, but the thing is that you just got to trust it. You got to go out there, and regardless of where you hunt, whether it's public or private, you got to try to avoid people.
Sure.
Talk with them. I mean, if you see them at the parking lot or you run into them in the woods, talk with them, try to figure out where they're going so you can go somewhere else. But what I used to get ticked off about was I'd have a predetermined location in mind, and I would be going there, and then I would see somebody in that location that was quote-unquote my spot, you know. Right. And then I'd get all ticked. Well, what I've learned over the years is whenever you see somebody in that spot, that's actually an advantage for you. That's not a disadvantage because you know they're laying down scent in there. You've already been in there, pretty good chance scouting. Now they're in there. There's a good chance that if there's a mature buck nearby, he ain't coming by there.
That's true.
That's not necessarily the case every time, but it's sort of a process of elimination. That's one of my biggest weaknesses as a hunter is having a terrible time picking spots. Like if I have five or six locations, I have a heck of a time narrowing it down. But that's one thing that helps me do that. Whenever I see other hunters, and I talk with them and find out where they're hunting, then I go back to the drawing board and I say, okay, I'm leaving that spot alone. Now that cuts down my options.
Yeah.
So it makes the decision-making process easier at that point.
Yeah, and I think all you know, us three that are talking to you right now, we've all grown up or have hunted 95% at least private ground. And
yeah.
What has given us that mindset a little bit, like you were just talking about, is we all go out every year to Colorado and, you know, over-the-counter archery elk hunt. And the first couple times you run into another hunter out there, you quickly realize, you know, there's other people there, and you're just going to have to, how do you say it?
You're going to have to adapt.
Go with, yeah, roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. If you run into them, you're cordial with each other, you say hello, you know, you might ask where they're going.
I mean, they have every right to be out there, sure, just like you. So, I mean, you can't be mad at them for wanting to do the same thing you're trying to do. So,
You're exactly right, Aaron. That is funny you say that because I'm the same way. I suck at picking where I want to go. I'll always second guess and go, oh, wait, well, the wind might, you know, whatever, right? Well, you know, when we're attacking this mountain opening morning of, you know, elk season or whatever, and we have, you know, these two guys going this way, these two guys going this way, and I go, well, there's only one way I go then. It's this way. You know, instead of, right, oh, which way should I go? You have that process of elimination, which does kind of make it easier. And
yeah, I mean, they're pushing elk or deer or whatever into those little areas where there's no people.
Right.
That's what we found. If you hunt an area like opening day of gun season, for example, up here in Iowa, opening day of gun season, whatever, pick a state. It's the same way. It's the same situation pretty well everywhere you go. But if on public land, there's going to be hunters everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to be in all the little nooks and crannies here and there. But I've noticed on and that's the highest pressure day of the entire year for the deer on public land, usually opening day if it's a weekend especially,
sure,
of gun season.
Mm-hmm.
If on that day, by that afternoon or the following day, if you manage to find a small little area on public land where there is no hunters, there's a chance you may see the most flipping deer that you've ever seen in your life.
Because everybody else is moving around someplace else.
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. They get stocked in there. And we've seen it happen over and over and over again. I know that deer are smart enough to figure that out. Like they see that pressure, they perceive it as a threat, and they move into areas of their range where there are no people. And they do it real quick. So, you know, if you can adapt to that, you can have some incredible hunts out there. I mean, And that's why I say my opinion has changed a lot over the years, just the more I've learned about how deer behave in relationship to hunting pressure.
Well, right. I mean, I would
assume public land can be so good.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume probably starting out, you probably were like what a lot of guys do. They go 100, 200 yards into the public land. They don't see nothing. They get burnt out. They move somewhere else. But, I mean, to really get after it, you need to get in there as deep as you can, away from everybody and away from the pressure, and find those little nooks and crannies of where they're hiding at.
Yeah. Well, and what's crazy, though, Aaron, I bet you've seen this. I bet you get to the point where, you know, you have to roll with the punches, and you might have a bunch of people trying to get deep, and all them deer are up 200 yards inside because nobody's there. You know, they're all trying to get deep after those deer, so they've moved, like you just said. They're not stupid. And, you know, sometimes just about adapting and figuring out where the guys are and not being where they are, you know, and it's – we have that ability in this state. We've got a lot of public land, and, you know, the options are there. I mean, I've hunted public just a handful of times with you, Micah, and, yeah, we saw hunters –
We saw hunters, but we also, I mean,
but we're on a hunter.
We saw deer every time.
That's true.
Deer and turkey. So, yeah. I mean, we got close. So, and I mean, that's, to me, that's a success. As long as I'm seeing animals, I'm happy. You know, I might not have been in within range or something like that, but as long as I'm seeing them, I mean, you put that piece of the puzzle and, you know, you can just build on it from there. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
And I think that's kind of the hard part for us is, and I'm sure you struggle with this when you first kind of made that switch too, is we all have private opportunities right now where we can sort of, you know, quote unquote, manage our property. So, you know, we can have cameras, we have cameras out, and obviously I know you can do that on public too, but we have our cameras out. We can kind of, you know, we get to know these different deer and figure out which ones we might try to go after and that sort of stuff. And every year I say, hey, if I harvest something early enough, I'm going to go hunt public the rest of the year. And then I never do it. Yeah. Because you have this, you know, you get comfortable, I guess you'd say, in this spot. And, you know, it'd be nice to actually finally pull that plug. It's that unknown that freaks you out, which is weird, because we go out to Colorado and it doesn't freak us out.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, I feel a little... I shouldn't word it like this, but a little guilt even that I have places I can go hunt on private. On my bucket list, I want to kill a mature deer off of public land. But at the same time, I want everybody to have opportunities, and I have mine. So, I don't know. I feel almost a little guilty.
Feel guilty
it.
For...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. But it's just...
Honestly, when I started, and you all do, I mean... Hunt however the heck you want to hunt. That's the beauty of hunting.
Absolutely.
Is you can make it individually whatever the heck you want it to be. But I'll just say this. I mean, I used to beat my dad's farm to death. It's 100 acres, and I would go in there. I'd take my week and a half's vacation from the appliance store in early November to just hunt all day long during the run. You know, I'd sit the same tree day after day. I mean, I'd sit there for hours and hours, pack my lunch, everything. And I'd see a couple deer every day. But I was right there on the farm, and I had pictures of bucks, so I just figured it's a waiting game at that point.
Right.
You know, and there's a chance that I'm going to get one eventually. And that strategy did work, but I had to put in an insane amount of time. Way, way, way more time back then doing that than what we put in now on public. Like, we've become more efficient about things now by becoming more mobile. And I'll say, after going and hunting public a good bit and then going back to the farm now, our success on the farm has improved because we've learned to manage the pressure.
Yeah.
And we've learned a lot of tactics that overlap and help both areas. That's the biggest advantage that we have. We're not the best hunters by no means, but the advantage we have is we get to go to tons of different environments and how deer behave in them.
Yeah, you got to learn different skills, like you said.
Yeah, you can take all that information. Every single time that you go to a new area, deer are going to be behaving slightly differently in that area. You'll see these small general things that overlap from one spot to the next. But whitetail hunting is so situational. And what I've found is the more situations you can put your mind into, the better off you'll be when it comes to hunting even specific bucks. Because a specific buck, especially once they get mature, most of them have a unique attitude, a unique personality almost.
Yeah. You can definitely see that with specific bucks, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and if the more adaptable you are as a situational hunter, the more adept you'll be at getting close to those deer.
Yeah.
I'm saying that through my own experience. I'm not saying that as a general rule of thumb for everybody. That's just what's worked for me.
That definitely makes sense.
And the guys some over the years. I mean, maybe that's just because that's the way we've done it. I don't know.
Well, and if you take your own experiences, you kind of think about it, Andy. I mean, mm-hmm. like you, in my personal experience, at least so far, every time I've had a change in property, that first year always seems to be amazing.
Yep. You don't.
And it's because you think new, and you're going, you know, and it's like you're not overthinking things. You're just thinking.
Yep. Yeah, deer don't have your pattern then either.
Yeah, and you go in there.
You're hunting the property probably different than the last person did.
Right.
Just because you are different than the last person. Your mind probably approaches things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance that you're catching those deer off guard.
Yeah. I fell into that trap like you just talked about, Aaron, is that first year I was at this new property I'm at, I tagged out two beautiful bucks. You know, and then yep. the next year I almost had this script written in my head. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know exactly how it's going to happen this year too. And, you know, guess what didn't happen? I didn't harvest the deer that year. So, you know, it's just kind of I can see what you mean by always, you know, thinking differently. And when you hunt public, you're forced to do that. And by doing that, you get better and better. And of course you all see hundreds of different, you know, public land spots, and, you know, the better you get at just making decisions on the fly. So, go ahead, Andy.
They get better about how to find deer. I mean, just.
You find deer, you can kill deer. I mean, that's, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of the most important part, I guess. And one thing that I've noticed just by watching your shows for the last couple of years, which I really wanted to see how you guys liked them. And then when I saw that you liked them, it made me a little upset because I had just spent all this money on two XOP Vanish stands and a pack to pack in my stand and these Hawk Heliums and all this stuff that I've got. And then I saw you guys go and change or start using saddles this last year, correct, Aaron? Is that the first year you used them?
Yeah, we've used them for a couple years now.
Is it a couple? Okay. So obviously you all like them because you're still using them. And I think, you know, how much more mobile, for the people listening, I guess you can maybe explain what a saddle is for anybody that might not know, but how much more mobile has that made you than your stand setups that you used before?
Oh, I would say a good boost. A quick disclaimer up front, though, if you're already into a mobile tree stand like what you're talking about in a mobile hunting system of any kind, that's like the big step for a lot of people. You know, and those are extremely effective. We still use tree stands from time to time as well. The saddles we're just faster with them because they're lighter, they're smaller, they fit in more trees with more limbs and such.
Right.
Okay. We can jet up in a tree with one of them, get set up. If we observe deer at 200, 300 yards, we can jet down and move over there twice as fast as we used to be able to with a bigger hang-on tree stand.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
But like I said, I mean, the hang-on tree stand, the ones that you just mentioned, they're really nice. Like, and they work great. They're just a little bit bulkier and heavier to pack, in and out of the woods, and they take a little bit longer to set up. At least they do for me.
Yeah, I'm not very fast. I mean, I've got a setup now that I thought I really liked, and then I started seeing saddles, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense. But, you know, I went out and got, like, the bracket system so I could get it up there quicker and then hang it on the tree and not have to bang it around, yep. You know. And on my sticks, I ended up buying daisy chains, actually from another guy in Missouri that makes Amsteel daisy chains. And, you know, just kind of being more quiet and faster. And then I saw those. I'm just like, yeah, that makes even more sense. But the more money I spend, the closer I get to getting in trouble by my wife every day. So, and another thing I've seen you guys do on the show is, which has intrigued me, because there are some guys out there that strictly hunt this way. How often are you guys hunting off the ground? That intrigues me, just because it's, you know, you're even more mobile than when you are in a tree. How often are you guys doing that?
What's that? What was the last thing you said?
How often are you guys on the ground hunting compared to, you know,
probably
in the saddle?
50% of the time.
Yeah.
I would say we're on the ground. You know, it depends on your personality and your style, too. Like, Zach, for instance, in our group, he prefers hunting on the ground. He hunts with the saddle, too. But he only, you know, and I'm speaking for him here, because he's like my brother, you know. But, like, he's the type of guy that's going to go into a situation more times than not, and he's going to try to find a setup on the ground that works for him. If he thinks that a tree is better, then he will occasionally jump up in the saddle. And that's why he likes the saddle, is because he can take a few wild edge steps with him and wear that thing, and it's barely any extra weight. He can still hunt on the ground, which is what he's planning to do a lot of times, where he can pop up in a tree, you know, if he needs to. I would say I'm more like a 50-50 type of a hunter. I go in there with no real expectations to hunt on the ground or in a tree. I'm just looking for what I believe will be the best setup in that area. Once I get there, read the sign, figure out this is the area that I want to set up, I'm looking for trees or potential setups on the ground and trying to compare how the wind behaves in different ones. You know, usually we can get ourselves into one or the other that we got some confidence in. But, you know, that's the nice thing with the saddle, is it's so light. I mean, several times we've worn those things in and, you know, just decided to set up on the ground. We started in a tree and got down and moved and shot one wearing the saddle on the ground. I shot a buck last fall wearing the saddle on the ground.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, those are my favorite ones to watch, is when, you know, you're like 10 yards away and the dang thing's looking at you in the face right before it eats the arrow. And, you know, those are pretty cool. But I guess it's weird, because I was telling you, I've been preparing to hunt public in this run and gun setup, but I don't really do it. And one of the things that kind of concerned me was, all right, I'm going to have this tree stand on my back and I'm going to be hiking in. And what if I just end up hunting on the ground? I just lugged in this weight for nothing. So that's what it intrigued me about the saddles, which I know we're going down a rabbit hole right now on gear, but that's what intrigued me about the saddles, was I can just wear that thing in then, and I don't have to, you know, feel like I just carried something in for no reason, because it's just, you know, it's like I'm wearing another pair of pants or a pair of shorts.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's one of them deals that I've been intrigued by it, and there's a lot of people that are starting to use them, especially in run and gun setups. And, you know, the first time I go hunt in a public setup, or the times you and I have, Micah.
Well, we always sat on the ground.
We've always sat on the ground. And the one time I tried to do a run and gun, I lugged this at the time. I didn't even have a Vanish. I had a gigantic Hawk, like a Magnum or something. And I lug it in to where I need to get, and the tree I was going to hang in was too big for the straps of my sticks to get around.
Oh, yeah, that's happened many times.
So I end up sitting this big stand in sticks, which at the time the sticks were just whatever sticks I had. I don't even know what they were, from Orchelins or something. And I end up sitting the dang thing on the ground next to the tree and hunting on the ground. So, you know, like my experience so far hasn't been great because, you know, I messed up. But that's what's intriguing. And I knew you guys were using them now, and this would be a good chance to ask you, you know, how much you like them and that sort of stuff. So that's good to know. It makes me want to spend money.
I have a question. I guess for myself, I like to self film a little bit, and I take a bracket in there with me and camera. How does the saddle? What's your experience of trying to film from the saddle? Is it fairly easy?
No, I'd say it's more difficult for me out of the saddle than it is out of the stand to self film.
Gotcha.
I could see that.
Because
you're facing the tree, is that most of the reason?
Yeah, well, the way I was doing it last fall, and I only self-filmed a handful of times out of the saddle. The way I was doing it last fall was I was turning around and I was standing on the platform facing directly away from the tree with my tether wrapped around my shoulder. So it basically, the tether rope was just holding me into the tree, right. And I was standing flat-footed on the platform, and from that angle I could film with my right hand around the tree, and then I could grab my bow with my left hand and shoot. No different than you would if you were standing on a tree stand facing directly away from the tree.
Right.
Yeah.
You just have a smaller platform.
Yeah, it probably gets a little uncomfortable after a while, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, eventually you gotta turn around and take a break, or, you know, sit down in the saddle or in the sling there and rest a little bit. But I don't know either. I mean, I don't have a ton of experience with it yet. I haven't figured out all the kinks yet. You know, been self-filming out of a tree stand a lot longer than I have out of a saddle. So
sure. It's
obviously easier for me to do that still because of my lack of experience. But I've been hunting out of the saddle now enough times that I know I'm way, way faster setting up with it.
I gotcha. Okay, well, kind of going down more of the products and things like that, take away the stands and your filming equipment, what's the number one
and
thing?
And your bow.
Your bow. What's the number one thing that you take with you into the woods every time?
Oh, that's a good question. Don't really take much,
to be honest. I mean, you'd like to have milkweed, if possible, to check the wind.
Yep.
Yeah, so you guys use that?
I usually have a rangefinder on me somewhere and a grunt call. Rangefinder usually gets pulled out, and I click it a couple of times every hunt just to check range on a few things. But it's only there for specific situations. Right. However, you know, if you don't have it with you, you can't use it. So that's why it's always with me. I use milkweed every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's such a big deal when it comes to any type of hunting. You have to know your wind. I mean, I would say that's one of the number one keys to being successful, is knowing your wind and, you know, trying to put yourself in the best position to where they're not going to wind you. Because if they wind you, it's game over.
What milkweed taught me, because, I mean, Aaron, you probably were like this for a long time. I'd always used, and I still do, like in Colorado and a lot of times here, just the powder. You know what I'm talking about?
Puffer spray.
Spray. And I bought, there's a guy on Facebook, I think he's called Butterfly Effect.
Oh, yeah, he makes our pouches
for us. Yeah, so I bought some from him last year. And I'd be sitting there, you know, like in the morning, and I would take the milkweed out, and I would, you know, let some out. And what it really has taught me is, you know, you don't think about Missouri and thermals, but seeing what thermals do in the mornings and the evenings and that sort of stuff, especially like if you're near a creek or, you know, a body of water or something like that, you know, you do that puffer spray and it's gone within 15 feet and you can't tell what's happening after that. You let that milkweed out and, I mean, you can watch it for 200 yards if you can see it that far. And it's crazy what it does in some spots. You know, that's the spot I hunt over at your place that, you know, I'm down in the creek bank. There's times where I feel like I can feel the wind hitting me in the face, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking it's going the right way, and I drop that milkweed, and it just sucks it straight down that creek.
Huh.
You know, and I'm like, I got to get out of here.
I'll be honest, I haven't used milkweed. I'm going to try it.
I'll give you some of that. I mean, it's cheap, but I'll give you some of the stuff I got.
I appreciate it.
It's worth it. You got to find some.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did you find that out about? Is that just something that you were taught growing up? I mean, I'd never in my life heard about milkweed.
No, Dan Infault.
Okay.
he was a, there's a whole litany of guys, you know, that we learned stuff from in 2014, 2015, in 2016. Well, we're still learning from them all the time, but A&M fall, guys like Joe Elzinger, Greg Litzinger, everybody on the Hunting Beast forum back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, a lot of the tenured members on there, these are guys that have been hunting public land for and trying to harvest mature bucks for decades. Like Dan Infall's a well-known guy now, you know, across the board, but that's the thing I think a lot of people still don't really grasp with him. It's like he's been hunting public land since, you know, back in the 80s, the late 70s. Like, guys like John Hart, you know. Those are the guys. Dan is the one in particular that I learned the milkweed stuff from.
Yeah. That blew my mind.
A lot of the other mobile hunting tactics, you know.
Yeah, that milkweed was one big, probably, you know, one of the biggest things from watching your all's show. I just had not, you know, for whatever reason, heard of it. And, you know, the first couple of episodes I watched, whatever years ago it was, saw you guys using that. And then, you know, you try it and you just see the difference between that puffer spray and what might actually be going on. And you're right. Dan's one of those guys. Like when I'm watching him on whatever show, you see him and you just wish you could crawl into his mind and take everything out of it. You can just see the experience and, you know, the smartness in him, which I don't have.
The smartness in him. Okay. I don't even know how to say smart.
Knowledge.
To be honest, he probably would tell you this. He's a simple guy, and when he goes out there and hunts mature bucks, he does it with a purpose. He goes into it with a plan, but he's a very adaptable hunter. The thing with Dan, you know, me, I tend to overthink things because I get so analytical at times.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, he has so much experience to this point where he does a much better job just following his instincts, you know, and getting into a location, and because he's been in so many of those situations. You'd be surprised. He's very direct with his answers and things when it comes to hunting deer on public land. And a lot of the things he says, he repeats the same stuff over and over again because it's true. It works.
Yeah.
I mean, and it works for everywhere, not just public land and private land. That was when I started hearing him talk about how mature bucks react to human scent and, you know, how they bed and stuff a few years ago. We started diving into the old archives at Midwest Whitetail and looking through all of the mature buck encounters that we had either filmed or edited or, you know, hunted or saw ourselves, because there was dozens and dozens of them, you know, in that video library. And just everything he was saying was ringing true with the way that they behaved.
Yeah.
And it was just like all these light bulbs started going off.
And I think that's what's so good about shows like yours, you know, the Hunting Beast, Born and Raised for us, like with Elk. Just if you're wanting to get into hunting, you can learn a lot. You know, when I first started hunting, and Andy, you started when you were real young, but I was a little older when I started hunting. I just went. And for the first few years, I didn't ever see animals. I mean, I might see like one deer, you know, a year, and I'm like, this sucks. Why am I not seeing anything? And then I started getting on YouTube and whatnot and, you know, going, okay, these guys say I should pay attention to my wind, so I'm going to do that. And then all of a sudden, boom, deer show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, just by learning simple things like that when you're new and, you know, you don't know what you're doing, you know, if you want to start hunting and you don't have access, there's public land. There's wherever you live in this state, there's going to be some public land within, I would bet you money, within an hour where anybody lives in this state. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so,
lost opportunity in Missouri.
All you got to do is go and take what, you know, shows and forums and stuff like that put out and use it, and you could be successful, I think. I mean,
the information's out there. Just got to do your time, you know, go look for it. But what advice would you give to somebody that's wanting to do what Nate just talked about? You know, they're really kind of new to hunting. They really, you know, don't know where to start as far as finding a place to hunt public land-wise. Where would you suggest they start?
I would say, you know, don't be intimidated by public land. If you're worried about running into a bunch of people, try to get out there during the week. If not, don't sweat it. Just go out there and talk to the other folks that you see hunting the property and try to work with them. And like we were talking about earlier, hunt areas where you don't see people.
Yeah.
And consequently, you're going to start running into deer sign. And the other thing I'll say, and this goes for anybody, if you're a beginner or if you are an expert and you've been doing this for a long time, the more we move around, the more success we have. Like, don't get locked in to sit in one spot nonstop. Just if you don't take anything else away from all of the stuff that we spew out on our channel, that's the number one thing. Move around.
Makes sense.
And just by doing that, whether you're hunting public or private land, just by moving around, you're going to catch more deer off guard. You're going to catch them by surprise. And that's how you get real good, close, ethical shots with the bow. Yep. Often, especially on big bucks.
Yeah. Well, and another thing.
Just throw a dart at the map and go out there and set up. As long as it's a new area or a new tree or whatever that you haven't been in before, you got a shot.
Yeah. Well, and someone that is wanting to hunt Missouri, here's the nice thing. I don't know about other states, but you can get on Missouri Department of Conservation's website, and you can find every piece of public land that is in this state on their website. So
Yep. You
don't, I mean, we have it, but you don't have to go download Onyx. You don't have to go pay for some service up front. You can just get on MDC's website and find anything in your area. And then the other thing that I just called the conservation agent, like Aaron mentioned early in the show, and just said, hey, was wanting to get some information about this piece of ground. Can I hunt it with a bow? Is it okay? You know, how do I need to access? The one experience I've ever had with making that phone call was really positive. I mean, that guy told me everything I needed to know about, hey, can I hunt here? Where can I get in? That sort of stuff before I made the drive out there. And so if there's anybody in this state, I would guess those two things, if you do those two things and don't know anything else about a property, would you say that's a pretty good start at least?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, cool. You guys got anything else for him? I got one more thing. So what's some... I've been watching, but what are some projects you guys are working on right now?
Oh, the videos. We've been working on a bunch of Texas pig videos here recently. We're getting ready to film more arrow tuning and arrow building stuff in the next couple of days here. We've got some hunt breakdowns that we need to go through. We're going to do a mapping whitetails video at some point in the next month and a half.
Oh, there you go.
Where we talk about different terrains. Probably, you know, talk about whitetail, a few hunts from like the Northeast and down South compared to the Midwest and stuff like that. That's another video that we're going to be working on here in the short term.
Cool.
That sounds good. I'll have to look out for that one. I'm a big fan, personally, of the turkey tour. I watched all that. Yeah. I was, you know, at home during the whole COVID situation. And working from home, I was able to have you guys playing during
working,
the day.
Working, quote-unquote, from home.
In the, quote-unquote, background. able to watch the turkey tour quite a bit. I think I may have missed an episode here or there, but for the most part, I watched 90-something percent of it. But really got me itching to go out and try it myself.
Yeah.
Oh, man, turkey hunting's a blast. That's our favorite thing to do.
No, I'm.
You like that over deer hunting?
Yeah, pretty much all of us would probably say that we
That's crazy.
We like turkey hunting better than deer hunting. But, you know, we may not say the same thing on, you know, Halloween.
Yeah, whenever they start moving, it's kind of hard to, it's kind of hard to think about them birds then. Well, I got a question for you. Being how you're from Missouri, you've hunted in Missouri a lot. What would be your favorite Missouri hunting, public land hunting story? Do you have one of those for us?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Putting them on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you got a few up there.
There's a lot of good ones.
Were you with Ted when Ted shot that one from the ground? I don't know where you guys were, obviously, but he shot a large buck from the ground either last year or the year before. Sorry if I don't remember that.
It was the year before.
And it went on to private ground, and you guys had to get permission, even though the buck was just like, you know, 30 yards inside the property owner's property. You had to get permission to go recover him. Were you there? I can't remember. I remember Ted shooting him.
I wasn't there when he shot him. Jake filmed him shooting.
Okay.
But Ted and I scouted that spot about 5-6 days before that together. And then he shot him, and I met up with him and Jake, and then we all went out there and tracked him. And I was with him whenever we found him, you know, across that fence line.
Yeah. I remember you making the phone call to the owner, and that's why I was like, I can't remember if Aaron was filming or who was with him, but... So I'll answer it for you. That's my favorite Missouri public land.
That was a great one. That was a great one. I don't know, man. I've had so many good experiences out there with my buddies and my, you know, family and friends. It'd be hard to pick just one. That night that I shot my first buck with a bow was pretty fun. That was pretty cool. And I don't know if you could count that as a public land experience or not. It was kind of half public, half private at that point, but. Because the deer came off public, I shot him 10 feet onto private, and then he ran over onto public.
Yeah. We'll allow it.
We'll allow it. Yeah. The judges say allowed.
Yeah. I could hunt that private ground too. I had permission to hunt it.
So. Yeah. Oh no, no.
But that hunt of Ted's, that was really something. That was a really cool deal right there. And that's the epitome of being adaptable. They were up in a tree and saw several bucks on a movement pattern that afternoon and immediately climbed down and moved over there. That's why they set up on the ground. They set up on one trail.
Yep.
And that buck just happened to walk down it right there at last light.
If I remember correctly, they didn't move very far. I mean,
No, they only moved about 80 to 100 yards.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the difference between him being shot and not even seeing him potentially. So
that's right.
Especially with a bow.
That's why, like I said earlier, if you don't take anything away from all of our BS that you watch, just see how much we move around. Like, just by moving around. I talked about earlier in the podcast about how I used to sit the same stand over and over again, and I would eventually maybe kill something. But it would take me, like, 7, 8, 10 days of hunting all day long before something did perfect in that stand.
Yeah.
And when we started moving around those close range encounters, with bucks especially, just started going way, way up.
You just saw light bulbs. Did you hear all those light bulbs going off above our heads when you said that again? Yeah, it's just even on private. I mean, you get stuck in this rut, pun intended, right? I mean, you get stuck. And you have this stand hanging right here, and you know that's where you've killed the last two and whatever. And you get
stagnant
and stubborn.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. This is the right move. When it,
man, I'm telling you, when we go and do consulting trips on private ground in the off season, it's, and I'm not trying to sound arrogant when I say this, it's usually very easy to find out where the mature bucks are at.
Yeah.
I mean, almost without fail, because we hand the people that hunt the ground a map, and we tell them, mark on this map where you walk, where you hunt, where you check your cameras. And then they mark the spots on the map, and then we cross them off, and we go to the two spots that they haven't been. And boom, big rubs, big sheds, everywhere. And it's just like, I mean, I know that's real direct and simple, but I'm serious. That's about how it is everywhere we go. It's like sometimes it's 150 yards from, you know, their hunting cabin or the shed or whatever that they stay at or that they park at.
Yeah. Now, when you said that, I mean, I was just thinking about my hunting property and what you just said, and I drew myself a trail and where my cameras are and all the things you asked the landowner, and I'm sitting there overanalyzing what you just said to me already. Like, okay.
I did it on my dad's farm for years, so I know it. I mean, the first year I started hunting that thing mobile, I went and I flipped the farm, basically. I was like, to heck with this. I always hunt up here on this food plot. I grabbed my mobile tree stand at the time. I went clear around the back of the property to my neighbor. I asked him if I could walk in through his pasture. He said, yes, go ahead. Walked in through his pasture. I just went about it completely different than I ever had before. And that night, we saw 3 bucks, and 2 of them were the shooter bucks that I've been getting pictures of all summer long up on my food plot that had, you know, disappeared or went nocturnal. They were 350, 400 yards from that food plot, but they were living in the back corner of the property where I ain't never been.
Yep.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever walked in, to my knowledge, to hunt them from right there. I popped up in a tree and about killed one the first night. Those were two of the biggest bucks I'd ever even seen on the whole property.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know it works. It's just hard to do it. It's really hard to do it.
Get out of that habit of, you know, your deer stand. When I hunt the same 2-3 deer stands, you know, during early bow season, I just, like you said, I beat them to death. But come rifle season, I'm more comfortable on the ground, so that's when I'll start going to the places I haven't been during bow season. And you're sure. Right. Typically, you start seeing other things. Yeah, different stuff.
I mean, well, if you think about it, a bow, you know, in a perfect world, you'd like to do 30 yards and in every time.
Right.
With a rifle, it's a little easier to get out there. You can reach out and touch them a little further away. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And with all that said, you know, I've had some great hunts up there next to my old faithful tree stands on my dad's farm for the last 4 or 5 years. It kind of all depends on where the hot sign is at that given time.
Yeah.
You know, if the farm hadn't been hunted all fall, I could go up there to that food plot and set up in it in late October, and there's a good chance I'll see a buck come out on it.
Yeah.
You know, but if it has been hunted and people have been up there checking cameras or whatever, then I'll change my strategy a little bit.
Now, I'm going to make a promise to myself right now. If I start having issues this next year, I'm going to...
You already have issues.
Well, I already have it. We all know that. That was already a given. If I start having issues hunting this year, I'm going to try to be more adaptable and get over the fact that I might not be in a tree. You know, the property I'm talking about, the spot that is difficult to access doesn't have trees that you're gonna be able to get into. They're all thorny locusts. I guess you could get into them, but they're gonna be not fun. I'm gonna get over the fact that I might hunt from the ground and make those decisions earlier and move if I need to. You know, if I'm seeing potential sign or, you know, they're skirting me, that sort of stuff, I'm gonna do a little better at not being stubborn maybe this year. We'll see.
There you go.
Well, you know, it depends. If you have success being stubborn, then keep being stubborn, by all means. I mean, that's kind of the deal. Whenever people call us to consult on their property, it's usually because they're having problems. Like, and they're not able to harvest the bucks that they want or whatever, or achieve their goals, whatever.
Right.
So we usually go in there with a fresh perspective and can help them. But if somebody is having success on their property doing it a certain way, I'm definitely not going to tell them to change anything.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
Very true.
Well, man, we really appreciate you hopping on with us, you know, talking about Missouri public ground. I mean, there's opportunities and options out there for the citizens of this state and, of course, surrounding areas. And we thought it'd be really cool to have a Missouri boy on who has shown everybody that public ground can produce and, you know, does it the right way in our opinions. We really enjoy what you all do there. We like I said, I don't watch a lot of video, but I will take time out of my schedule and watch your guys' stuff. So it's really good. I think people relate to you all really well, and we appreciate you coming on and talking to us and our seven listeners.
Get out there and do it. Yeah, our
seven. Well, thanks, guys. It was my pleasure.
All right, you guys got anything else?
Go check out THP, guys. It's good.
Check out their YouTube channel. Check out all their content. Learn a lot.
Oh, no, that'd be great. Send them all over. Check it out. Let us know what you think.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one, guys.
See ya. All right, that's the show. That was a good one.
Yeah, I think the main thing that he was trying to get across there, don't be scared to move.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even think about some of that stuff, but he's right. Don't be scared to make changes. If you're beating your head against the wall, why continue doing it?
Yeah, just get up, go somewhere else.
Yeah. And then the other thing I think that's important to know is, I mean, the opportunity is out there for Missouri Public Ground. You know, if you want to start doing it, just start doing it. It's really the only, you know, get on MDC's website, find some public ground around you. Call conservation agents, or even some of those conservation areas have people that work there. I don't know what you would call them.
Like a park ranger type person.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, you can call that person, and they'll give you whatever information you're really looking for. Right. They probably won't tell you exactly where to go, but
if you get a good one, they will. Sure. I've personally had, hey, you might want to go check out this area. I mean, conservation agents do that. So yeah. If you can find them. They will give you information if you ask. You just got to ask.
And go get boots on the ground before season. I mean, wintertime would have been really nice to do that when it's not, you know, 95 freaking degrees outside with
flies all over. But on my way over here, it's super, super nice to see. I mean, you start driving and looking in, you know, bean fields or, you know, hay fields, and you can see them out there. I mean, that's one of my favorite times, just to take drives in the evening.
Oh, yeah.
And just start watching and looking. You start to figure out where they're feeding in the evenings. And especially early season bow hunting, they're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was a great episode. Learned a lot and got to just listen to how, you know, the hunting public does things. It's kind of cool to hear how often they hunt on the ground compared to in their saddles, mm-hmm. and how often they do different things. You know, I didn't, you know, when you're watching it, you don't really think about how often they are on the ground, but that's one tactic I might try to use.
I say, have me intrigued to make a change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, hope you all enjoy the show. We will catch you on the next one.
All right. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast.
That's not the right time to do that.
Oh, okay.
You know that. Come on, man. Be more professional.
My bad.
All right.
That's the end.
God.
Bye, guys.
See ya.